I told myself the transfer was a clean break. New floor, new badge, new skyline outside the windows. Distance has a way of pretending it's a cure. HR called it a lateral move. My manager called it an opportunity. I called it survival. The truth was simpler and uglier. I had slept with someone who held power over me, and when it ended, the temperature in that building changed. Meetings felt tighter. Emails carried weight they never had before. When the transfer came through, I packed my desk with shaking hands and told myself I was done being afraid. I didn't understand yet that influence travels faster than people do, that resentment doesn't need proximity, that a man who feels escaped doesn't let go just because you cross a river. By the time I realized his reach had followed me, the new office already knew my name for reasons I hadn't earned. Distance didn't save me. It only taught him how to chase without showing his face. I had been with the company long enough to know how power dressed itself. Clean lines, open doors, casual authority worn like it wasn't authority at all. We were a Dutch logistics firm with a reputation for efficiency and calm. Flat hierarchies, first names, bikes parked under the stairwell, the kind of place that sold itself as modern and humane. I worked in regional operations, coordinating teams that never met each other, but depended on my decisions to stay afloat. I was good at it, quietly competent, reliable in a way that made people forget you were there until something went wrong. He was senior management, one rung below the executive team. Not my direct boss, but close enough to my world that his opinion mattered. He had a way of drifting into meetings he wasn't scheduled for, leaning against door frames like he belonged everywhere. He noticed things, complimented without sounding like praise. He made people feel seen, which is a currency in offices that pretend not to trade in it. The first warning sign was how often he sought me out without needing anything. Stopping by my desk under the excuse of alignment, asking about my workload in a way that felt personal. I told myself it was mentorship. I told myself it was flattering. I had been invisible for years, and suddenly I wasn't. The second warning sign was how quickly his attention narrowed. He stopped looping others into conversations. He started scheduling one-on-ones that drifted past their agenda. He remembered details about my life I hadn't meant to share. When I tried to redirect, he laughed it off, made me feel overly serious, like I was misunderstanding his openness. By the time the line crossed, it felt less like a jump and more like a slope I'd been walking down without noticing the incline. Drinks after a long quarter. A hand on my back that stayed a second too long. A look that asked a question I didn't answer out loud, but didn't shut down either. I knew better. I also knew how tired I was of being careful. The affair didn't announce itself. It slipped in between late nights and shared stress. It told me I was chosen. It told me I was special. It told me that what we were doing existed outside the company, even though it was built entirely inside it. I didn't think about leverage. I didn't think about what happened when it ended. I thought about feeling alive in a place that had taught me to be efficient, not human. When it started to feel wrong, it was already complicated. He became possessive in small ways. Comments about who I ate lunch with, jokes that landed like warnings. I began to feel watched, not monitored. Watched. When I pulled back, he didn't explode. He tightened. More meetings, more visibility, more presence. He framed it as support. I felt it as pressure. The transfer idea came from HR after an anonymous complaint landed somewhere it didn't belong. Not about the affair, about favoritism, about blurred boundaries, no names. Just enough smoke to make leadership nervous. I wasn't asked directly. I was offered a solution, a chance to reset, new office, same role, fresh start. I said yes before anyone could change their mind. I didn't tell him until it was approved. When I did, his smile didn't reach his eyes. He congratulated me. He said distance would be good. His tone suggested the opposite. The new office was across the country, closer to the coast. Bigger floor plate, brighter light, different rhythm. I threw myself into learning names, systems, unspoken rules. I needed to believe the past had a border. The first week was quiet. Then small things started to feel off. A meeting invite canceled last minute without explanation. A project reassigned before I'd had a chance to contribute. A senior colleague referencing a conversation I hadn't been part of, but somehow involved me. I told myself it was adjustment. I told myself I was being paranoid. Trauma has a way of making patterns out of coincidence. Then I got an email copied to half the leadership team, questioning a decision I'd made that followed protocol exactly. The tone was polite. The implication wasn't. I recognized the phrasing, the way concerns were framed as curiosity. It was his language. I hadn't heard his voice in weeks, but there it was, embedded in text written by someone else. I learned quickly that he had friends everywhere, that his influence wasn't formal but social. He didn't need to issue orders. He just needed to suggest, to plant doubt, to remind people who had backed their promotions. I had underestimated how networks work in places that pretend to be flat. When I tried to defend myself, I was careful. I stayed factual. I didn't mention history. I didn't accuse. I knew how easily that could turn. Instead, I became cautious to the point of paralysis. Every email drafted twice, every decision double-checked. I shrank in a role that had once fit me. He reached out eventually, a message framed as concern. He said he'd heard I was struggling. He said he wanted to help. He said we didn't have to make things awkward. I didn't respond. Silence felt like the only boundary I had left. The retaliation didn't escalate loudly. It accumulated. Missed opportunities. Being left out of conversations that mattered. A reputation forming around me that I couldn't see but could feel. Difficult. Emotional. Not a team player. Words no one said directly, but everyone understood. I went to HR in the new office. I spoke carefully. I talked about patterns, about professional interference. I did not say affair. I did not say coercion. I watched the woman across from me nod sympathetically while her eyes did the math. She asked if I had documentation. She asked if I had witnesses. She asked if I had considered that I might be misinterpreting intent. I left that room knowing I was alone. The worst part wasn't his reach. It was my own complicity in protecting the company that was quietly burning me. I still believed in the work. I still wanted to be seen as reasonable. I still feared being labeled a problem more than I feared him. When my performance review came back with language that felt borrowed, I understood the game. This wasn't about correcting me. It was about creating a record, about making any future complaint look like deflection. I considered quitting. I considered burning it down on my way out. Instead, I stayed. Not because I was strong, because I was tired and needed the paycheck and hadn't yet figured out how to tell the story without destroying myself. The transfer that was supposed to save me became a holding pattern. I did my job. I stopped volunteering ideas. I watched others take credit for work I had laid the groundwork for. I learned how to disappear without leaving. Eventually, the pressure eased, not because he let go, but because he found new focus, another project, another person. Power doesn't fixate forever. It cycles. I moved again 2 years later, this time by choice. Smaller company, less prestige, more control. I left without confrontation, without closure. He never apologized. The company never acknowledged what happened. On paper, my career showed progression. Inside, it showed scars. What stayed with me wasn't the affair itself. It was the lesson that distance doesn't break influence, that transfers can be tools, not remedies, that silence can keep you employed while hollowing you out. I still catch myself scanning rooms for him even when I know he isn't there. I still draft emails like someone might read between the lines looking for weakness. I learned to survive. I also learned what it cost. When work stops being just work, it doesn't always explode. Sometimes it corrodes, quietly, professionally, with everyone smiling while it happens.